I just had a meeting yesterday about an ACT study from 2009 that found a disconnect between what post-secondary, so college-level economics professors, instructors said was needed and what was being taught in the high school. ACT said that the gap was, their quote, was unacceptable. And I just wondered if you had a suggestion of why that is the case when we have, at least in Minnesota, for instance, Minnesota was one of the 15 states in the study. We have such a solid link between MCEE and universities, with the directors being university professors. Because it was very concerning to me, the findings at ACT, and I haven't experienced those findings whatsoever. In fact, anecdotally, which doesn't carry much weight, as you explained to us, I see the exact opposite. But their findings were that it was an unacceptable disconnect.
Yeah, I'm not aware of the exact study to which you refer. So, my comments will have to be taken with that in light of that. I'm going to respond, in terms of the way we think about these kinds of problems of the Fed, which is, you identify that a gap is unacceptable, but then you have to dig down and get granular, as we like to say, at the Fed, and try to figure out what are the areas exactly that are the problem areas, and then try to fill those as best we can, using, I think, vehicles like the MCE to figure out what the gaps are and then try to fill those gaps. The term unacceptable, it's eye-catching, and it's a way to convey concern, and it's good, but it's not the end. You have to dig down and figure out what exactly are the problem areas, and then use those to fill in. But that's vague, but it's partly because I just don't know the details of the study.
Thank you. First of all, thank you very much for the very nice comments about the Minnesota Council. Since I'm given this opportunity, I'm going to take the opportunity to ask you a question that's more related to the current economic crisis, if that's all right. And I'm just wondering what impact you believe, or the Fed believes, the sovereign debt crisis in the EU is having on the U.S. economy, and what steps or considerations the Fed is taking in their deliberations.
Well, I think that those are excellent questions. And but I think that the way that Europe, and I talked about this last year, unfortunately, I talked about it last year, and I'm talking about it again this year. I think what's happening in Europe ends up affecting the U.S. economy in two distinct ways. And one is sort of a direct macroeconomic effect, that if Europe is struggling in terms of growth, there's less demand for the goods we export for them, and that puts a damper on what we're going to be doing in terms of our economic performance. That channel is relatively small. That direct Europe is one of many trading partners we have. Obviously it's a depressing effect, but it's not a major effect. The bigger effect is through the financial system. That right now there's uncertainties about Greek sovereign debt, and those have spilled over into some other countries' sovereign debt as well. Then there are financial institutions in Europe that hold that that sovereign debt, and I think investors are concerned about probably some of those as well. The way that has shown up in the U.S. Directly is that we've seen a decline in equities since the end of June, and in term, maybe even more directly, and I think we've seen it in measures of volatility in the stock market. There's what's known as the volatility index, which CBOE produces. And it's traded, basically, or the way to trade on is using back-out volatility measures out of the options being traded in the S&P. And that is very elevated right now. And so that's it peaked, I think, around just a little bit below 50 in early August. But even now, it's still around 30. And in June, it was closer to something like 15. Okay, so that is a measure of the level of uncertainty, I think, in financial markets. My baseline scenario is one where Europe continues to make the steps that I think are necessary. They face, I think, enormous political challenges. They have
17 different countries that have to be brought along board. But they have been making steps as we go along, and I think they will continue to do so. You know, they might not move as rapidly as we might like, but they face, I think, very big challenges in moving rapidly. So and my baseline forecast is one where they're able to continue to do that. But certainly there is a downside scenario where the economic events move more rapidly than the political response, faster than the political response is able to develop. And that's one where we have more of a financial spillover then coming from Europe into to maybe affecting our own country. You know, and there I think that this is something that would affect the U.S. economy. The Fed would have to respond, I think, in an appropriate fashion. And I think we have some experience with tools that we would be appropriate from our own, from the global financial crisis that took place in 2007-2009. One thing we're already doing is that we were engaged in central bank swaps with the ECB. We basically swap dollars for euros. They turn around and lend those dollars out on an as-needed basis onto European entities. And that's one way that we're partnering with Europe to try to keep things under control.
I heard you speak at the Carlson School last month, and you shared with that group that your personal model shows an improvement in the unemployment rate from 9.1%. I don't want to be quizzed on this, to 8.5 or 8.4. I wonder if your model has changed in the last month.
No, I would say it's roughly the same. This is a time period that would be an improvement that would be taking us to the end of 2012. So, you know, it'd be roughly around 8.5 still. I think a lot of the news that's come forward since that point in time has been positive, and so, but you know, it's positive relative to a situation we might have been expecting news not to be so good. So it basically, I would say that I'm still going to be around that 8.5 range by the end of 2012.
Yeah, I'm a strong believer in the independence of the Fed. And do you have any concerns about the continuing or ongoing independence of the Fed, given legislators' predilections?
I would say no. I think that there's a lot of interest in what the Fed is engaged in right now, and it has been true for the last 3 years or so. And we've been doing engaged in a bunch of unconventional policies, and it really comes back to communication and education. You know, I think we've been probably better at thinking up the policies than communicating about them and explaining them. And I understand why that happens. You know, especially September 2008. You know, you're trying to save the world. I'm not talking about myself here. I was not president of the Minneapolis Fed at that point. But there were others in the Federal Reserve System. We're basically trying to salvage the financial system at that point in time. So they're trying to operate at a very fast rate of speed. With that said, I think that our failure to communicate as effectively as we might like about what we were doing, how we were doing it, and why we were doing it, I think that has. It leaves us with some communication challenges on an ongoing basis. But, I don't think criticism of the things that we've done, our concerns about the things that we've done, translate into a loss of independence. I think the citizens of the country, including our political leaders, should be interested and engaged in what monetary policy is doing. And so I don't have a problem with this ongoing interest and the kinds of actions we're taking. And I think it behooves us then to respond by doing an even better job than we're doing on the communication side.
Okay, so as a classroom teacher, what is an effective way to address the recent Occupy Wall Street, and kind of connecting back to the former question about some of the animosity toward the Federal Reserve Bank?
Yeah, I think that, I think first of all, I think in terms of the way I think about Occupy Wall Street is, and some of the similar movements that are springing up around the world, is that the pace of the recovery has been distressingly slow. And that's a frustration that, frankly, I share. I think that the pace of recovery has been distressingly slow. In terms of the actions of the Federal Reserve System, you know, I think it's very challenging to explain, but we have to do the best we can. And it's because why it's hard to explain is it requires something that's near and dear to economists' hearts, a counterfactual analysis. It requires a saying, being able to explain, suppose the Fed had not taken the actions, provided the liquidity facilities that it did in 2008 and 2009. Suppose that those hadn't been in place. Suppose it had not provided that kind of liquidity to the markets. What would have happened? Well, we would have had a much bigger shock to the financial system. Even though unemployment is high today, disturbingly high, unemployment would be even higher if the Fed had not taken the actions it did. So I think I think those kind of counterfactuals, I think they're very natural to economists. But they are much more challenging to explain. But of course, that's the bread and butter of our subject, is the counterfactual. You know, suppose a shock hits the demand curve and it shifts. What happens? That's a counterfactual. And that's the counterfactual is about suppose the Fed had not set up the kind of liquidity facilities that they ended up doing, they had set up in 2008, 2009. I think we have pretty good descriptions on our own website about what those liquidity facilities look like and how they worked. And why those were set up to try to support the financial system at that point in time.
Excellent. One more, please.
I'm going to be bringing my students down here for a tour in January, and I was just wondering your thoughts. Practically speaking, what is like the most important concept you want them to understand about the Fed? What do you want me to teach them before I bring them down here? Like, what should they be looking for?
Wow, that's a tough question. You know, I'll say that the thing that has, I sort of knew it before I became president, but it's really struck me over and over again since I became president, that really the bottom line of this organization is integrity. What integrity means is that decisions are always about being grounded in data. We're always about grounded in research. We're trying to address things in an apolitical, data-based, integrity-oriented way. And that's the message that I wish I could convey to more of the American people on an ongoing basis, that somehow they could look inside our organization and see sort of the dedication and the integrity that our employees bring on an everyday basis. So if I had to summarize it in that one word, it would be that. In terms of an economics lesson, that's a very challenging thing to say because I ask about. This is not the most important thing by any means, but it is something that's been troubling me recently. So I'll just share it with you that I think one of the things that's really interesting in terms of monetary economics is that the Fed has created a large amount of bank reserves in the past, expanded their liabilities in a large way since September 2008. By over $2 trillion. And, you know, there's a lot of fears out there that creation of those reserves is going to somehow be inflationary. I think, and if you, the problem, and I think if you read a lot of textbooks, you see the creation of outside money in this way, monetary base in this fashion, it has to be inflationary. But that's no longer true. It's longer true because there's been a fundamental change to the monetary system in the United States that took place in October 2008, and that's that the Fed is now allowed to pay interest on reserves. That changes everything. Now you can maintain a large balance sheet. You can have lots of outside money in the system. But if you change the interest rate enough on that, it will not spill into the broader economy and create inflationary pressures. It's a little – maybe it's too detailed. But that – But I honestly think this is a huge lesson to try. This is exactly the kind of communication point that we need to be better at the Fed, because many citizens look at the creation of the reserves that we've engaged in, the liabilities we've engaged in, and think the Fed has been inflationary. And you'll hear that criticism from a number of observers. Where is it coming from? Well, it's not coming from the inflation rate. We all know that. The inflation rate's basically 2%, a little under that even over the last 3 or 4 years. It's coming from the fact that we've expanded the set of liabilities in a big way. So we have to be better at explaining why that's not inflationary. And somehow it always ends up being as technical as I just was. But But that's it. So we have to somehow get it from that technical level down to a place where we can hammer it home to people. Okay. Let me know if how that goes. Thanks a lot.